So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Politics.com. And I tell you, while you guys are checking out the site, make sure you join our RSS feed, our little weekly newsletter, and click on a sponsor or two at LouisvillePolitics.com, too. They have everything rolling. In the meantime, you know, it is Wednesday night, and what do we bring you on Wednesday night? Why, none other than Dale the Truth. How are you, sir?
Greetings, my friend. How are you doing?
Not too bad. Considering we live in a socialist empire.
Yep.
And, all the things that are going on, I'm sure the NSA is spying on us again right now as we speak. So,
yep.
You know, other than the fact that every move we make, every breath we take, every word we say is being monitored and by the U.S. government, well, really, it's been a great day. we've got a lot going on the local front, though, but I tell you, no bigger story right now than our own version of Chris Christie in Kentucky, or I'm sorry, Mayor Michael Bloomberg in Kentucky, I should say, Allison Lunigan Grimes. I don't know if you've seen the latest, but Grimes is actually out there defending Obamacare.
Yep.
Talking about what a great thing it is, even though she has some reservations about some of the stuff in it. It's going to bring all kinds of federal dollars to Kentucky. It's going to create 17,000 jobs. If that's not enough of a lie to make you gag, it gets worse. She goes on talking about, you know, they've got to streamline the process so we're not over-regulating small businesses, which, of course, is 70% of our jobs. And as Ed Martin will tell you, who is a small business owner, this is almost a death threat to them. And they want to make sure the employer mandate is implemented the right way. But here's where the comparison to Michael Bloomberg gets in, Dale. I really want you to talk about this because I think you're going to love this. Because here's why I compare to Michael Bloomberg. Because she couldn't shut up. She had to keep going. She was at the fair making this speech. And she had to say, that's why it's a good thing, she's talking about Obamacare, because we want to incentivize employers to provide coverage. We don't want them cutting hours or, worse, cutting employees. Now, isn't that exactly what they've been doing so far, just with the threat of implementing Obamacare in a full way?
Well, it is, and I guess with her coming out and coming clean and admitting this, I guess it's her way of doing a mea culpa and letting us know she really didn't want to run in this race. We kind of knew that when she first had her opening dialogue, and there was like her grand opening or whatever. Then they redid it, and only Alison Leonard Grimes gets a second one, a redo of her grand opening, and it just seems like she does not want to be in this race. So it's kind of clear now.
I think she clearly knows she's in over her head to even do the job, much less run for it. But she's talking about, you know, we don't want to see any hours cut or anything else, which is exactly what Obamacare has already done. But then she continues talking, and then she goes on further to talk about the shortfall of doctors. She says we're going to have to work to provide for the shortfall of physicians we're going to need to provide this universal access. Well, the reality is we don't have enough doctors today. In large part because they just can't make any money, especially when so many are dependent on Medicare insurance benefits, Medicaid, and the poor insurance benefits that don't even pay them enough to open their doors. You know, but now she all but admits that we're going to need more physicians, as we've been saying for a long time, and we're not going to get them. There's no way we're going to get more doctors with this new federal mandated universal health coverage that's going to pay them, you know, 70% of what the real costs are. You don't go into business to lose money. But here's Michael Bloomberg, a.k.a. Alison Lundigan Grimes. She says, and I quote, "We're here at the state fair, and if there's three reasons why Kentuckians, especially our seniors, need access to affordable health care coverage, just look over to the right where you see the donut burger, the chili cheesesteak, and the covered french fries that are here." That's Michael Bloomberg. She's saying, we eat bad and everything else. That's why we've got to have universal health care. And the next step from that is to what? Ban your large sodas like Michael Bloomberg is doing and trying to control what people eat and drink.
I think she believes what she's saying. I mean, she's a big government, not the Gestapo type. So I believe that she believes in her rhetoric, but that's the problem. The Democratic Party obviously didn't get to her or didn't run her words through their PR machine before she said it, and that's proving that she really didn't want to be in this race. Because I think she's telling the truth about what she thinks. We know she's dead wrong, but I think she believes the propaganda.
Oh, I believe she's a socialist too. Or is that not what you were referring to? Because that's essentially what the socialists want. They want to control everything we do, everything we eat, everything we do at all, period.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I think that those are clear indicators that she's part of the Obama regime mindset, and that's clearly what's wrong with America. I saw that story, and I knew I had to talk about it tonight because she's clearly in over her head. I don't think she can even do the job. Why she's even running for it is beyond me, and I think you're right. She doesn't want to run for it. She was forced to after the whole Ashley Judd fiasco blew up in their face. And by the way, rumor has it that Alison Lundigan Grimes is the one who put Kurt Morrison and Sean Riley up to releasing that to Mother Jones. She had a private conversation with Sean Riley before that tape came out, and a lot of people are speculating that that's what they talked about. So it didn't come just out of the blue. The Democrats thought they were going to use that to bring down Mitch, and they realized it backfired because it was an illegal tape. So they backed off of it, backed off of Ashley Judd, and threw Alison Lundigan Grimes to the wolves. At least that's what I'm being told, and that's what I think and believe. So what the hell, you know?
She obviously is not a contested race for Mitch McConnell, and you can tell where his concerns are. You can tell what he's sweating bullets over. It's not Alison Leonard Grimes. It's this primary, and for the first time, the Turtle Man has got a primary, and he's never had to worry about this because the only time he went there running against them were people who just kind of put their name on the ballot. And for whatever reason, I don't know why people are perennial candidates
right.
Put their names on the ballot. But this time he's got a real race. And, you know, I think I've heard a little bit of what you said on some of the other shows that you do with Mr. Martin. And I think you and I might have a disagreement on Matt Bevin. But I think Mitch McConnell's got a lot to worry about with Matt Bevin.
Well, I don't think Mr. McConnell has much to worry about with Bevin at all, and we will disagree on that. I just have a hard time understanding, you know, the more I hear from this guy, the worse it gets. I mean, you know, the reality is that he did lie about being MIT educated on his resume. He kept it on LinkedIn forever until it became an issue, and he took it down at the end of March.
But it's
so
LinkedIn.
Lying.
I mean, at least he's a private sector guy. It's kind of funny because Donald Trump came to Mitch McConnell's defense. That tells you the kind of crowd that Mitch McConnell runs in, that the media whore model himself, who's had, 7 or 8 bankruptcies, Donald Trump came to McConnell's defense. And McConnell would never know anything about LinkedIn because LinkedIn is a connection of private business connections. McConnell's never held a damn private business job in his life.
No, I care less about Donald Trump, and you know that I have my own reservations
about the MIT
McConnell.
Thing on the resume.
But my point is, well,
shit.
The point is, though, Donald Trump isn't running for office, and Donald Trump didn't overinflate his resume to gain office. Matt Bevin was.
McConnell's buddy, Donald Trump's coming to his defense because they're both globalists and run together.
You know, a lot of people would say if I come to your defense or you come to my defense, there's something wrong with one of us. And we're buddies, so I really don't care about
that.
They
think there's something wrong with both of us, but that's neither here nor there. I'm just saying, what does it tell you when McConnell
is the
minority? What does it tell you when McConnell's the minority leader, and all of a sudden here comes Donald Trump defending him? It tells me he's nervous.
It doesn't tell me anything. I mean, look at all the people that jumped to Hillary Clinton's defense or Bill Clinton's defense or Barack Obama's defense. Those people I don't care about anyway. They're not elected. They don't represent me. You know, so I could care less if Donald Trump's running his mouth. Donald Trump has been a joke and always been a joke. If he wants to run his mouth on behalf of Mitch McConnell, who cares? I don't.
But you made the point. Why is McConnell asking him to do this if he's not scared?
I think anybody elected is going to ask everybody to do something for him. I think that's a given.
He's not done in the past. McConnell's been there for 30 years. He's never had to worry about a primary opponent, so he didn't go get other globalist neocons to defend him against more constitutional candidates.
I don't think that's a valid argument. I think when you're running for office, what you do and how you represent yourself matters. And in Matt Bevin's case, there's a couple of major things with me. But the MIT thing, the latest one, is just one more example of do I trust this guy or not? You know, and when I look at the Connecticut deal from last year on his business, we've talked about that on air, but I believe we talked about that while you were on sabbatical. But, you know,
I know I wasn't here to talk about it. I didn't even say anything in the last 2 weeks.
He took $200,000 last year. This year when he announced that he was going to run against Senator Mitch McConnell, he also said that he was going to give his campaign millions of dollars of his own money. So he admits that he has millions of dollars, and I've got no problem with that. He's had a successful investment career, whatever he's doing, that's great. Congratulations, Matt Bevin. But if he's got millions of dollars to ingest into a political campaign that he may or may not win, and it's money that's gone once it's spent, if he doesn't win, he'll get it back later, you know, through lobbyists and stuff if he wins. But if he doesn't win, it's money gone. But he's got millions of dollars for that. Then why in the hell, when his company burnt down last year, did he have to go get $200,000 in government money at the same time he's talking about he doesn't believe government should be in private business and bailouts and stuff?
I can answer that question. I mean,
I hope you
know, do. I don't know. No, I'll be glad to answer it. Number one, when McConnell lies and calls it a bailout, McConnell knows about bailouts.
You're not
he
answering
voted.
The question. You're going back to McConnell.
I'm sorry?
You didn't answer the question. I talked about Matt Bevin taking $200,000 last year. I didn't talk about Mitch McConnell.
No, I mean, I was going to answer the question, but you just interrupted and wouldn't let me finish.
Go ahead.
So if you want me to answer the question,
I do, but still, it's a Matt Bevin question. It's not a McConnell. I'm not looking for a
question. Well, if you let me finish, you'd hear the whole point. My whole point is, unlike McConnell, who has bailed out all these huge conglomerates, unlike Mitch McConnell, what Matt Bevin got was a loan, a government loan, not that much different from student loans, and he has to work to pay back that loan, where McConnell's buddies get the bailout and they never have to pay it out back. So when McConnell says that Bevin is for a bailout and calls him bailout Bevin, that's just flat-out propaganda and lying.
I'm not using McConnell's words here. What I'm saying is he took $200,000 in government money. That government money should not have been available to private business for a loan if you're a multimillionaire who doesn't believe
the
government should be
involved
in private business.
And then there lies the problem. Then you need to change the laws where they can't get those loans. But McConnell won't pass those laws either.
I'm not saying he will. But Matt Bevin has no incentive either since he's daggone, you know, since he took money from it. And you know, he's part of the problem at that point. That makes it
I totally disagree with you. I mean, it just shows me that McConnell's two biggest accomplishments are obstructionism and reelection success. He's power hungry. And the neocons who want him back in there can't tell you what makes him a better candidate than Bevin. All they can tell you is, oh, he's minority leader. We don't want to lose that power. They can't tell you what makes him more constitutional.
I got news for you. At this stage of the game, it's the devil you know versus the devil you don't. And Matt Bevin so far has brought himself a lot of negatives by his own problem. I mean, it just ain't Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell might be running the campaign ads, and I'm not a Mitch McConnell fan, and you know that. But Bevin is not a worthy opponent. If they're going to, that's the problem with me. If you're going to put up an opponent in a primary against somebody like Mitch McConnell who has this kind of power, give us somebody fucking credible. And I'm sorry for the language, folks, but that's the whole problem with
someone else files, then I'll look at them. I mean, you are correct. It's the devil we know versus the devil we don't know, but it's not correct the way that Bevin's record's being presented. And if someone else files by the end of January, then I will look at them as just as credible as I do Bevin and the...
Have I made a misstatement? Have I made a misstatement in the way that I have portrayed Bevin? He took $200,000 in government money from Connecticut last year when he's a multimillionaire that says he doesn't need the money and
no,
he can waste
it
on
a campaign.
No, he's
not making a misstatement.
That's not a misstatement. Well,
no, my response to him taking a loan is, so what?
So what? I have a problem with somebody who says they're a Tea Party or who doesn't believe in government bailouts and government money and this private business thing, who's a multimillionaire who doesn't need the $200,000. That's like me and you going to buy a draft beer on 99-cent draft night at the local bar. So why did he take it and then run for office and then try to act like he's anti-government and anti-government money? That just bothers the hell out of me. Let's go to the phones real quick. I think this is Paul. Yes, sir.
Yes, this is Paul representing Stop Invisible Taxes tonight. And I'd love hearing you two Republicans beat up on other Republicans.
You guys are
absolutely playing right into the Democrat plan. Let me clarify what I said, because I've actually got a couple of other points on this whole Bevin case that some of your listeners may not be aware of. One of the things that the Democrats do when they run into somebody like a Bevin, and believe me, the Democrats have got plenty of Bevins in their camp, is that their excuse, their playbook excuse for saying, well, that's okay, is that we are simply getting that which we are entitled to get under the law. Everything we're doing is perfectly legal, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they really don't care whether it's consistent with any of their platform planks or their ideals. They don't care. They simply hide behind the fact that it's legal.
I agree.
And what it sounds like to me is that Bevin is kind of playing that same game, but it rankles a certain faction of folks, particularly those with Tea Party bends, if you will. So I'm okay with the criticism of Bevin pretending to be a Tea Partier, but don't beat up on him so bad, because he's simply pulling a page out of the Democrat playbook, and the Democrats have been getting away with that angle for years.
I'm glad you mentioned Democrat. I'm glad you mentioned Democrat, because as far as I'm concerned, you know, this is my personal opinion, and I'll stick to it. But I haven't seen anything about Bevin, who's being labeled as this Tea Party candidate. And, Ken, I know you're in the queue, my brother. We'll get you on in just a second. I haven't seen anything about Bevin that's labeling him as a Tea Party candidate that is Tea Party-like. He's saying the same rhetoric, but he's doing the same old thing by taking the money and stuff like that. So he's going against the ideological principles, and you say that's a Democratic tactic. Is it possible that Bevin is really a daggone Democrat in disguise? Because if you go to Connecticut and you research Bevin in Connecticut and everything else, you see him spending a lot of time with Democrats in Connecticut, not Republicans, not Tea Partiers.
Well, that's an ad hoc argument, because
Bevin?
In Connecticut, 98% of people are Democrats. I mean, they don't know what a Republican or a black person looks like in Connecticut.
Okay.
But let's tell the truth about the situation. Bevin is in this race. I don't care if you call him a Tea Party candidate. Don't call him a Tea Party candidate.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still learning about Matt Bevin, so I don't want to sound like a Bevin cheerleader. But what I do know about is 30 years of McConnell. And this is not – I disagree with Paul that this is a Democrat, quote-unquote, way of doing things. It's a big business way of doing things. And
it's a uniparty way of doing things.
I'm sorry?
It's the uniparty way of doing things, because
we both
know the uniparty does the same thing. I agree with you there. Go ahead.
No, and I mean, it is the uniparty way of doing things. And my point is, McConnell has no business – he does it because he's running scared. He has no business putting someone under scrutiny for taking out a government loan when he's voted for all the bailouts. So, again, the devil we know – has given us 30 years of bailouts and all these big, big government programs. So for him to go after
somebody and
say, oh, you didn't go to MIT, it's him running scared, or he wouldn't waste the money on the advertisement.
Which brings me to my second point, gang, and that this has something to do with some of the myopia that Republicans have in general, and in this particular case, Bevin's camp has a myopia, which if they can get that solved, here's the perfect thing to solve it with. He's being criticized by McConnell for doing bailouts and using government program or government money. Well, one of the things that's happened here in Jefferson County, Kentucky, is that a number of years ago, under Democrat Mayor Dave Armstrong, a deed was signed transferring the ownership of the 120-plus acres of land on which the Churchill Downs racetrack, home of the Kentucky Derby, transferring that land to the city of Louisville. And to this day, the city of Louisville owns the land. Now, why? And since then, the Churchill Downs, the corporation, has been undertaking several multi-million-dollar improvement projects on that land. Now, gang, why would they want to transfer the land to the city of Louisville and then start spending hundreds of millions of dollars on improvements so that they can generate even more revenue? The answer is really simple. And remember, some of this money couldn't have happened without government officials' help, and Mitch McConnell might have some fingerprints on this one. When they transferred that land, that removed that land from all the tax rolls.
Sure it did.
Churchill Downs, the corporation, pays no real estate taxes on the land that they're generating hundreds of millions of dollars of revenue every year on.
Sure.
Now, if Bevin's and crew, if they get, I would hope, if they really wanted to be Tea Partiers, they should come out swinging on stuff like that. And that is an extremely high-profile target. And I will guarantee you they will step on a lot of political toes of people of both parties, and quite possibly Mitch's foot might be right there to step on. So
Paul, that's why I said, opportunity, gang. Right. No, I was going to say, Paul, that's why I said I haven't learned everything there is to know about Bevin, and I have not heard him say one time, hey, I'm your Tea Party candidate. I've heard a lot of people calling him that, because how dare somebody have the audacity to run against the Turtle Man? And when someone runs against the Turtle Man, when he's the minority leader sitting on piles and piles of money in that turtle shell of his, people think, oh, my gosh, he must be running at McConnell from the right, so he must be the Tea Party candidate. I've never heard make that claim about himself.
Well, you know, the Tea Party label has been put on him by mainstream media. They're the ones who continue planning Tea Party. And I totally agree with that assessment. He hasn't claimed that he's a Tea Party candidate.
Nope.
Mainstream media has portrayed him as such. But the problem is, the reality is that a lot of people are looking at it that way. And before we go further, I've got to let Ken weigh in. He's been sitting back patiently. Ken, go ahead.
Well, you know, I just wanted to weigh in. And I missed the very beginning of the conversation. But, you know, my problem with all of this is all we're hearing out of this race is negativity. I mean, we're hearing people beat up on other people. I've been telling candidates for years, if you really want to start garnering public support, especially as a minority candidate, you need to stop talking about the flaws of the other guy. Because reality, the media does that job for us. I mean, if you don't know Mitch McConnell's dirt, at least what's easy to find, then you haven't been reading the paper. You know, Matt Bevin, I'm sure, has dirt. Great. Mitch McConnell's campaign is going to bring that out. If you really want to stand out, you need to start talking about solutions to problems. How are you going to fix the problems we all know we have? And it's extraordinarily frustrating because still to this day, candidates haven't figured this out. And at the local level, you're starting to see some of this, at least up in my neck of the woods. And I'll tell you, it actually energizes a base. It gets people to go, hey, even if they're not going to vote for you, right? It takes away the momentum from the other side. Now it's not a us versus them thing. It's one guy beating up somebody, and it almost looks like childish if all they're doing is hitting you with negative stuff, and you're like, hey, I'm just here to solve problems. Here's a problem I see. Here's what I think we can do to solve it. And that changes the tone. The only thing positive that I've seen in this race so far, which is ironically the worst thing that could have been done, is this thing that came out about Grimes supporting Obamacare and talking about how it's going to bring jobs. Well, could you have picked a less popular issue in the state of Kentucky to come out
in
positively?
A conservative state, right.
I mean, that was really stupid. I don't beleaguer or want to tear down anyone, but just from a purely political standpoint, that's not real smart. I think that the point, though, is that if you can latch on to things that everyday Americans and everyday Kentuckians understand are the problems and start putting forth some actual solutions, then you're going to undercut, for instance, if you're a Republican, the Democrats like to say, hey, the Republicans are the party of no. Well, in a way, that's very true. All they say is, no, that's a bad idea. But then they don't put forward the, hey, here's the good idea.
But let's look at reality here, though, okay? I mean, and, you know, and for one thing, for the record, I have not watched a Mitch McConnell ad yet. I refuse to, just on general principles. I refuse to do that. Well, I mean, I've got TV, but I very rarely watch it. When I do, it's late night, and I'm watching a comedy to unwind to get my ass in bed. But, you know, I don't watch these political commercials because I know political commercials are a joke, and I know they're always going to be negative. So, you know, as far as any information that I'm putting out there on Matt Bevin is concerned, it's come from my own personal research, as most of my stuff does. The second thing that I really want to put out there, you're talking about you don't think that the candidates get it yet, and that's why they always do this negative thing. You know, I think they do get it. I would disagree with you there to one extent and one extent only. The reason negative campaigns are run is because they lower the voter turnout. They turn people off and you lower the voter turnout. The lower the voter turnout, the more manipulative you can be in a close race. It's that simple. They know that the negativity turns off voters, but it's a hell of a lot easier to turn one voter than it is 5 or 10 voters. And that's the game. They know the game. They play the game that way intentionally. The losers are we, the people, as you eloquently pointed out, and we are. But, you know, how do we get to this positive thing? Because you're saying that in your neck of the woods, you know, people are getting excited and getting involved, even though they may not vote for the person that's bringing them to the race. But my question is, are they voting at all? Can you tell us that the voter turnout is higher where you're at because of more positive messages? That's what I want to see. I want to see proof in the pudding.
Well, I can tell you that the voter turnout is higher than expected in the last 3 or 4 races up here. Now, I can't attribute it only to that. I go out and I talk to independents and others, and in my position, right, I talk to a lot of third-party, independent, unaffiliated voters because that's my easy target range for what I do. When I talk to these folks, there is universal consensus that Republicans and Democrats are not giving us answers and that what they want is answers. That's what they want. And if understand, elections are won by that middle 20%. You've got 35% on one side or 40% on one side that's always going to vote Republican. You got 40% that's always going to vote Democrat. It's that 20% in the middle. Those are those others, independents, third parties, unaffiliated folks. And I'm telling you, they want answers. They know all this garbage about, oh, the economy's recovered. Everybody knows that's a lie. All the stuff that's coming down the pipeline, they hear all the negative stuff, but they're like, great, more negativity, no answers still. And I'm just telling you that if you want to get that middle 20%, you've got to start talking about answers. Now, the way we can affect that is, and I can tell you for a fact that I do know this, that when you have a third person in a race, it forces the issues to come out. It forces them to talk about issues because no longer can you just say, that guy's the devil, so you have to vote for me. Now you're talking about issues.
That actually makes sense. Actually makes sense. I mean, I was a third person in a race right here in Louisville. I ran for the top job in Louisville in 2006. I ran for mayor. And, you know, at the end of the race, the later stages of the race, the last 2 months, 3 months of the race, sure, that voice made a difference because the last couple of months, you know, my opponents, Kelly Downard and Jerry Abramson, had to talk about issues because I didn't allow them to sugarcoat it. I stuck to the issues. But the reality is, by that time, you know, most opinions were generally made up, and the mainstream media would not do any coverage to me as a third-party candidate or anything else until September, right before the election, was the first televised debate that I was allowed in. I wasn't allowed to debate with these guys at anywhere. They would not quote me in the newspaper. They wouldn't even contact me for anything. Now they contact me for everything because of who I am and what I've done since then. But when I was running for the office, no, let's ignore this guy. Let's ignore the third party until it's really too late in the game to make one hell of a difference. And my experience with it. So as much as I agree with you on the third party making a difference, you know, without that mainstream support or the news support or anybody else getting involved and giving that third party an equal voice, how much difference do they make, really?
I mean, welcome to my world. And I can tell you,
I know you know.
In 2006, I had a candidate that I was the campaign manager for in a congressional race up here in the 4th District. And we, like you, were not allowed to go to the first two of the three televised debates. And you could tell the difference, because in the first two debates, the Republican and Democrat, who ironically had very, very similar policies, had nothing to talk about other than who was more corrupt. And that was the whole fight all the way through, who's more corrupt. Now the third debate comes along, we're invited, lo and behold, we're talking issues. There aren't any, you know, real big slugfest of you're more corrupt than accusation. That's gone.
Right.
And that's one of the ways that that's solved. One of the other things that's been proven is changing the system of voting. If you go to a ranked choice voting or instant runoff voting rather than this, you know, plurality stuff that we've got today, you end up with campaigns that, hey, I'm not your first choice, I at least want you to be my second choice, you know.
Sure.
And so then all of a sudden these candidates actually have to be nice to each other, because if you make the voters angry, well, now you've got, you know, they're their third choice or not a choice at all. And
well, sure, because that third choice is going after that 20%, and that's going to sway the election. Oh, well, I agree with you there.
Okay, I got to ask Ken a question if I can jump in here.
Yeah. Go ahead, Dale.
I got to ask Ken a question, because, Ken, I got to ask you. I got to play devil's advocate with you here. If you think that I agree with you that people want to hear about the issues and they want to hear answers, and I'm hearing it sounds like you're saying people don't want to hear negative campaigning, but the problem is if people didn't want to hear negative campaigning and they weren't going to go out and vote based on negative campaigning, politicians wouldn't keep spending millions and billions on negative campaigning, because it works. Negative campaigning works. And my question I have to ask you is, if that's negative campaigning, what if you have an opponent like a Mitch McConnell? You got the turtle man who's been in office for 30 years, and he's voted for everything unconstitutional and voted against everything constitutional. Do you call that negative campaigning if you point out his record?
No, I don't call it negative campaigning to call out his record, but I think that if you make his record the focus rather than what you're going to do differently, it's all about the tone and the way it's framed, right? Instead of saying Mitch McConnell did XYZ and that's bad and that's why you should vote for me, it's, hey, I think we should be doing ABC, and based on Senator McConnell's record, he doesn't seem to follow that, but, you know, I don't know, but I want to do is XYZ.
Now, I agree with you on that, but the problem is we got Matt Bevin having to spend his own private money, so, you know, maybe he's not running the best commercials, but he's having to use his own money to put out campaign ads, and I'm sorry, people who are not very political oriented, they do watch TV, and what they see is chemical companies and globalist conglomerates putting on ads kissing Mitch's ass. They see ads
talking
about, hey, Mitch McConnell's the greatest thing since sliced bread. Call Mitch and pat him on the back and tell him how much you love him and give him some fellatio while you're at it. And the chemical companies are paying for that. I do watch these commercials.
I can tell you,
I'm not going to be like Ed and say I don't watch them. At the end of the commercials, it says paid for by blah, 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 chemical company.
Well,
right.
Listen, we've got to take a break. Let's hold this one after the break, folks. You're listening to the Inspiration Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Stay tuned, folks. It's going to get heated. We'll talk to you in just a bit.
So you're driving down the road, minding your own business, and bam, something hits your windshield and leaves a ding, or even worse. Has this happened to you? Don't worry, folks. Help is here. Huntsman Auto Glass is family-owned and operated right here in Louisville. Huntsman Auto Glass only uses original equipment manufacturer replacement glass, and in most cases, any repair or replacement is paid for by your auto insurance. That's right. No deductible, no cost to you. Call Huntsman Auto Glass at 502-214-8566 or go to huntsmanautoglass.com for more info. Huntsman Auto Glass, where they will fix your smash in a flash. Tell them Ed sent you.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace. Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound.
You can keep on knocking, but you can't come in, right? Phone numbers, as always, 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334. And you can also join us in our live chat right here at the studio as well. You know, guys, we got a lot to get into. Well, we have other stories to get into, but let's go ahead and stick with this for a few minutes. Ken, you were responding to Dale right before break. Why don't you finish that? And then, Paul, I want you to jump in because you've been silent for a while.
I think if you saw a legitimate third person, and nothing against Gurley Martin, but if you saw a legitimate third person jump into the Republican primary that had, you know, $10 million worth of backing, that suddenly it would not become – it would stop being a Matt Bevin hate fest from the McConnell camp, and it would turn into, here's all the stuff I've done for Kentucky. Because at that point it can't be, you know, all negative.
But let me ask
only
you
these two-way races where it can be a negative race.
I agree. You're right. Two-way races are where it's most negative. And what I was just telling Ed during the break is when you are the minority Senate minority leader, so you're arguably one of the five most powerful people in government, it looks very petty to say, hey, this guy didn't go to MIT.
Well, right. I never denied that it looked petty. But once again, I haven't seen the commercial. I've been told about it. I've read about it, but I have not watched it. But, you know, I mean, the thing for me, though, is, you know, Mitch McConnell has a 30-year track record. His negatives are out there. Everybody knows it. Attack him all you want to. Most people are already aware of most of that anyway. You know, but what Ken is talking about, the positive end of it, you know, the only thing I've seen or heard about Matt Bevin, as far as the ads and things that he's run, they've all been negative too. You know, so if Matt Bevin wants to prove he's different than the establishment, what I would like to see, because you always expect a negative to some degree, everything is always negative now, but I would like to see a balance. I would like to see Matt Bevin go out there and contrast A, B, C to X, Y, Z, as Ken so eloquently put it, so that he can show why he is different. Why he is different, but he's got to make sure that, you know, if you're going to throw, you know, rocks at glass houses, make sure your house is clean. And his house has cracks in it, so that's the problem.
It all comes back to the money, Ed. I mean, we know that Mitch McConnell, the Turtle Man, says that money is free speech. We know the Turtle Man has always said that money is free speech. And the people who are watching those commercials aren't the ones who are going to go investigate Matt Bevin's website, because if they go to Bevin's website, they'll see where he's against raising the debt limit, even though McConnell's voted for it, or he wasn't.
But we also have to, point this out too, though. If money is free speech, and I think we need to get rid of all the corporate interest in politics, I really do. I've always agreed with that. But if you look at this though, you know, we say that negative attack ads are bad, and Mitch McConnell's getting all this funding. He's also taking in millions of dollars for private donors.
Yeah.
People like me and you that are sending him money. So there must be something about him that they like. Paul.
Well, he's also getting his booth paid for the state fair, like I was telling you in the break, you know. And I know Ken Moman's definitely on my side with this thing, that stupid write-off where you check the little box and $2 or $3 go straight to the two major parties. They don't go to any third parties. And he's also getting money from the state Republican Party of Kentucky, whose booth at the state fair is just a McConnell love fest. He's getting money when you and Mr. Martin go pay for the Lincoln Day dinner, so he's getting all that money.
Sure, sure. And for the record, I didn't pay a dime for that dinner. I was a guest.
Well, somebody did. Somebody got paid.
I agree with you. Somebody did, but it wasn't me. I don't pay for
his
stuff.
Money paid for McConnell. That's all
Paul.
I'm saying. Bevin doesn't have that luxury. I mean, I'm sure Ken is still in agreement with me about that ridiculous check the box and all this money goes to the two major parties.
Oh, I'm totally with you
on
that. Forget that. Go ahead, Paul.
Hey, assuming Ken's premise about the middle 20% are the deciders, as old George Bush used to say, the deciders, mm-hmm. He was the chief decider. Well, if that 20% is the election decider, then negative advertising is aimed at that 20%, but it's also aimed at another group, guys. And that other group are the party faithful, because the party faithful need to hate somebody in order to stay a member of the party faithful. So negative advertising is being done as much to keep the party faithful focused on the other side's bad guy as it is in swinging the 20%. So Ken's assumption is that the hardcore Democrats and hardcore Republicans are going to continue to support their candidate no matter what, and that we need to consider working on that 20% that makes the final decision as to how an election is going to turn out. So that's what I wanted to say about negative advertising. It's there to keep the party faithful, loyal, and to try and swing that middle 20% one way or the other. Okay?
Well, Paul, I agree with you, Paul. What I was telling Ed during the break, too, is you look at the numbers. I wish the numbers indicated that the more there was negative campaigning, the more people stayed home. But we know that's not the truth. And I think we're all on this panel here in agreement that we need to get rid of that box by giving money to the parties, and we need to get rid of that straight party voting.
Think of the people. Now, Ken is focused on a group of people, since he's involved with the Libertarian Party. The Libertarian Party, these folks think, okay? They study, they understand. A lot of the party faithful are both on the Democrats and Republican side. They are simply little robots. You know, they really don't think, they don't want to understand. If the Republican Party leadership says vote for so and so, they do it. Same thing on the Democrats. Democrats say vote for so and so, they do it. So Ken's group is a whole lot more thoughtful, albeit I would even say a whole lot more intelligent than the average person. Okay, but going down your road, Dale, that little checkbox that says on the tax form that a certain amount of money can be designated to the two political parties. Well, first of all, coming from an invisible tax point of view, why are we, the taxpayers, underwriting the cost of primary elections anyway, which only benefit two parties? Number one.
We should never do that. The
two
parties should have to do what Ken Moman does, and that is run their own little private party convention.
And Iowa manages to take care of their caucuses without any tax money being spent. So the two parties in Iowa have to spend their own money and handle things. And, you know, when they have to spend their own money, they organize locally and execute locally, and they have people bring in potluck dinners and all that jazz. It's amazing how that works when you don't have tax money.
Isn't that incredible?
So that could work in Kentucky if we let them have the primaries in January, but when they get around in Kentucky, the primaries don't mean shit, so...
Well, I defy
for president,
anybody
that is.
In Kentucky.
You know, that's why Iowa gets all the turnout for the caucus, because it's all the attention put on them in New Hampshire.
I defy anybody in Kentucky to show me a membership list. Show me a membership list from either of these two private companies called the Democrat Party and the Republican Party. Okay? Show me a membership list. because a voter registration list is simply, remember, the NPP in Kentucky means no party preference. So the voter registration list is only an indication of party preference. It is not a membership list. But yet, check boxes on Kentucky tax forms, send money to a private entity known as the Democrat Party of Kentucky or the Republican Party of Kentucky. How on earth can that be legal? Now, I'm going to leave this everyone with this thought. I happen to know for a fact that there is an individual in Kentucky that has studied this issue on how to deal with it. I truly wish he would start formulating a plan to organize and let's get this thing rocking and rolling. And I know he's listening to my comments.
I'm with
you. I want
to
talk real quick, though. Caucus versus primary, a lot of people don't know. Kentucky primaries cost $7 million to the taxpayers every time we do them. I guarantee you that in Iowa, they do not spend $7 million because the Republicans and Democrats have to fund it. I guarantee there's
they
not
probably
$7
don't
million
spend a tenth of that.
Spent there. Right. And then on top of that, the income tax checkoff in North Carolina, the Libertarian Party happened to be eligible for that, too. And lo and behold, as the Libertarians started gaining more cashola out of that, hey, they just changed the law and they got rid of the income tax checkoff completely in North Carolina because the Libertarians were getting a pretty good chunk.
Well, Ken, so, it's like how long did it take you to have to fight the different county clerks around the state where they wouldn't even tell you who the hell is registered in your party?
I'm still doing that.
That's awful. That's awful. In the meantime, you know, we do have other news. I kind of want to switch off of this. There's a couple of things I want to put out there tonight, you know, and Detroit. This is something to think about, too. While we're all sitting here fighting and arguing over these negative campaign ads and these idiots are running for office and we're trying to pick our candidates, let's not lose the sight of the big picture here. While we're following under these guidelines of arguing over, you know, whether your I is dotted or your T is crossed, government people love to just blow our money, and Detroit is another good example of that. Detroit has already, as part of their bankrupt, forked over $12.8 million to lawyers and consultants as they're trying to, you know, come out of this Chapter 9. You can go to Newsmax.com, and Paul, I know you linked that in the chat room, and I appreciate it. You know, that was one we were covering, and the thing about it is Jim McTevia, he's a management consultant, a turnaround management consultant, actually told Detroit News that the cost for the bankruptcy for Detroit can easily pass $250 million. That's $250 million that are going to lawyers and so-called consultants. Just to give you some example of how much that is, that's enough to pay for 2.5 years of benefits to more than 166 retirees who are facing pension cuts right now. They're going to give the lawyers and consultants $250 million, and they're going to take it off the retirees' backs. What do you think about that?
Where does a bankrupt city get $250 million to pay those kinds of fees anyway?
I totally agree. And it's going to 11 different firms. There's 11 different firms that are actually working on this bankruptcy now. So, you know, that's exactly it. You look at that. You look at places like Birmingham. You look at California. You look all over this country at all these bankrupt cities that are going to continue going bankrupt. Kentucky is on the verge of going bankrupt, whether they like to admit it or not. They love to brag about this so-called balanced budget. And as we found out from our good friend Chris Toby Monday night, Kentucky Fried Pensions, you guys need to look at that book and buy it off of Amazon.com, by the way. But, you know, we talked to him, and essentially Kentucky doesn't have a balanced budget. They just borrow money from the pension funds. They underfund the pensions. Kentucky is one of the second worst pension system in the entire country. So we're going down that road. So when you look at that and you're going to start looking at federal government is going to have to start looking at some sort of bailouts, where does that leave us if we don't have somebody like a Mitch McConnell in office?
Well, Ed, the question I would ask you on the on Kentucky possibly, you know, going bankrupt, I would ask you to go back to something I've been talking about for years, which is the two different sets of books that most states keep, which is the what they claim to be the budget, and then the CAFR, the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. So when we look at the Comprehensive Annual Financial Reports for Kentucky, and they show all this extra money that the budget doesn't show us, why aren't they using that money then?
You know, I'm total agreement with you there. But see, that's what I'm saying, though, because we're sitting here looking at making some serious changes. And you know, I'm kind of torn between what those changes should be, because I know the situation Kentucky's in. I know the situation that you know, Michigan is in, Detroit primarily. You know, we know what's going on in other places around the country. You know, right here in Louisville, I mean, we're getting ready to have some major problems. I got some explosive stuff coming out in the next week or two, folks, that's going to rock this whole city. So, yeah.
Ed, organized crime keeps two sets of books. So organized crime and government.
So we were talking about government.
Both do the same thing, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, exactly. You know, but that's standard procedure at every level now. I mean, let's even look at the police, who actually lie about felony, you know, criminals and everything else. You know, now if you go in and you break into somebody's house and it's a felony, no longer that. You know, now you're getting misdemeanor charges, things like that, where they want to go out and mess with guys like me while they're ignoring, you know, gang related problems like these three guys that shot that white jogger the other day. You know, these are the kind of things that are going on that's disturbing, because all of this stuff, this government is lying to us and doing everything else and coming after us for more of the pie, and we're sitting here allowing that, this negative campaign, so that some guy could try to keep office for his own personal power. What I want to see from a Matt Bevin or an Allison London and Grimes or any other candidate is stand up and say, look, we know these things are wrong. This is how I'm going to fix it. That's the positive side that I think Ken is referring to. But we're not going to get there. In the meantime, we're going to let Detroit spend $250 million and screw 166 retirees. That, to me, is wrong. I mean, that, to me, is so wrong, it's unbelievable. And then the mainstream media. Here's another story going out. We couldn't get the mainstream media to do anything about questioning Barack Obama's birth certificate, for example, until Sheriff Joe made a federal case out of it, if you will, and proved that the birth certificate was false. But, man, all week long, it's all been about Ted Cruz not being eligible to run for president because he was born in Canada to an American mom. The same scenario we're doing with Barack Obama. So, you know, we look at this stuff, but the mainstream media, now that we have a Republican who has questionable natural-born citizenship status, now it's an issue. But we still haven't got them to do due diligence with Barack Obama. You know, so, I mean, this is the thing. This is the mainstream media. This is government officials. You know, graft, greed, and corruption, the dual books, you know, dual citizenship, if you will, when you're going for the highest office of the land. You've got all of these things in play, and we've spent the majority of this hour talking about negative campaign ads. So who's the real winners and losers here, guys?
Hey, the good news is we're going to be the winners ultimately if we can just hang on that long. On KHOW's website today, an initiative in four Colorado counties to basically secede from Colorado and vote as to whether or not they want to become the 51st state. Now, this isn't just a pipe dream, guys. This has actually been approved by those counties' governments to put the question on the ballot. They're actually going to have that on the ballot this fall. Okay. Now, just because it's on the ballot doesn't make it happen automatically. There's some other hurdles that have got to be overcome. But the good news from my point of view is that there are enough people in the nation that are now acting in a way to say, I'm tired of the status quo. If you want to go and continue your ways, fine, but you're going to do it without me or my money. We're going to start a brand new way of doing things. I'm out of here. Now, interestingly enough, there was actually a mention in the same article, and this is getting into some stuff that I haven't researched, but the article stated that should the Colorado legislature not approve, let's say the voters approve the initiative, and Colorado legislature, for whatever reason, doesn't allow it, then these four counties could be, and this is the term that they used in the article, could be annexed by Wyoming.
Yeah. I know.
I love the fact that the issue is even being looked into because, as some of you folks know, I am totally in favor of looking at a restructure of the states here in these United States because Washington is so broken. We are not going to be able to fix Washington as things now stand with the current system. It's not fixable.
I totally agree with you. And I think it's just going to get worse. And if I can go back to Allison Lundgren and Grimes for a minute, I really want to put this out there, too, because there's a story that came out today not many people are aware of. But, you know, Allison Lundgren and Grimes is bragging about how Obamacare is going to be great, you know, and all this other stuff, and how it's not going to hurt anybody, and it's going to create 17,000 jobs. But if you look at a story out of USA Today, you know, Gannett-owned USA Today, you know, UPS is now going to remove thousands of their spouses from its medical plan. And they specifically cite that the costs associated with the Affordable Care Act have made it increasingly difficult to continue providing the same level of health care benefits to our employees at an affordable cost. So they're going to start dropping spouses. You know, now these are non-union, of course, because the unions have a contract, but they're going to start dropping spouses from employer-paid plans. You know, and a lot of people are saying Obamacare was going to make the families better because now your children can stay on your plan until they're age 26. But, you know, there's nothing in Obamacare that protects the spouses and allows them the same coverage on an employer plan. So, you know, it doesn't seem like it's a whole lot of people at one time. It's actually about 4% of, you know, the larger employers like UPS are actually excluding or have excluded spouses. But, you know, it's really interesting because now we've got another 8%. Including UPS, is planning on making those changes in 2014. So Obamacare is already destroying, you know, private health care plans with major companies, you know, and we're still talking about negative ads. There's so many things that are out there, folks. That's the problem for me. And I want to put this latest one out there just real quick. This is actually not very political at all, but we'll do this, and then me and Dale really got to hit final closing because we're running out of time. But Delaware Attorney General Beau Biden, yeah, you know, the son of Vice President Joe Biden, apparently has a mass on his brain. He was taken to the Anderson Cancer Center in Houston, Texas. They're testing it now, but apparently he got dizzy or something and went numb last week. They ended up rushing him to the hospital. They found a mass on his brain. They're conducting a biopsy, and they should know something by later this week or early next week about whether it's cancerous or not. But, you know, as much as I can't stand Joe Biden's politics, and I know Bo Biden is a subsidiary of that because there are a few things of his history I don't really like, you know, best wishes to him and his family for a speedy recovery and hope that it's not cancer. But I don't wish that on anybody. In the meantime, Paul Kent, thank you so much for your phone calls. We appreciate the conversation. Dale, it's that time of night, baby. Final thoughts.
Well, final thoughts, and for something totally different. 21 years ago today, a federal force of U.S. Marshals, FBI, and BATF jackbooted thugs conducted a murderous assault on Ruby Ridge, Idaho, at the homestead of Randy and Vicky Weaver, resulting in them shooting dead Vicky Weaver and their son Sammy. This incident is highly controversial, but this was the point 21 years ago in 1992 that a lot of people started to get their eyes open. That was one of the main points at which I decided we needed to stand up against the New World Order.
You know, you bring up an excellent point, because if you look at what's happened since then, you can actually even go to Waco, too, as far as overreach of federal authorities and stuff. You know, they really have made it a situation since then that I believe they have escalated. It's like, we got away with this, what else can we get away with mentality? So I'm glad you brought that point up. There's something, another point, if we're going to get into what we need some changes. Here's something that I don't talk a lot about. I could spend a whole show on, but we're not going to tonight. I'm going in a completely different direction with my closing. I don't know how many of you guys have heard about Charlotte's Web strain of marijuana. We continue to talk about medical marijuana. We continue to think that we can get that approved. We even brought a guy in from Florida today who's been using medical marijuana that is shipped to him every 25 days. He gets, I think it's 300 joints or something like that, but he gets all these joints every 25 days delivered to him from the federal government, and has for 30 years before this guy started on medical marijuana and the government was supplying him with it. He had a condition that made tumors grow out the outside of his bone on the outside of his skin. Once he started on the medical marijuana, that stopped. Well, we have a strain called Charlotte's Web today, and the reason this is important to me is I have a godson who is a miracle, a true bona fide miracle in this world. At 3 months old, he was pronounced dead. About 4 minutes later, he brought himself back to life. We were told he would always be a vegetable. He would never walk. He would never eat. He would never talk. He wouldn't have any brain function whatsoever. He would just literally live on a feeding tube for a little while until he died. Today, that young man is 7 years old, and he walks. He breathes. He eats. Doesn't talk yet, but he's starting to try to, and he's got some problems. But the reason Charlotte's Web comes into play here is everything from him started at that three-month mark, and he was having dozens of seizures each and every day for years. They can constantly change his seizure medication, even today, to try to control the seizures. A little girl named Charlotte lives in Colorado. She's now 6 years old. Was averaging 25 to 30 seizures a day. Family moved and put her on medical marijuana. The difference between medical marijuana in most cases versus the typical marijuana that most people smoke to get high is the THC level content. But in medical marijuana, marijuana also has a little known chemical called CDB. That is what gives you the medicinal part of marijuana, and it has been proven beyond a shadow of a doubt to be a medical miracle and marvel. The U.S. government even admits today that they really don't know much about marijuana, even after all these years. Charlotte's Web is a strain of marijuana that is high in CBD and very low in THC. You can smoke a whole bunch of it and never crave a White Castle. But in the case of Charlotte, and they were doing everything they could, changing her seizure medicine and everything else every day, Charlotte was essentially a vegetable. Once they started using medical marijuana, now most people think that that means you're smoking marijuana. That's not true. Marijuana can be made into a liquid form. They use medical marijuana twice a day on her meals. And since that time, Charlotte today now averages 2 to 3 seizures a month, typically in her sleep, not during the day when she's awake. 2 to 3 a month from 20 to 30 a day, folks, on no seizure medication whatsoever, because she has 2 oral doses of medical marijuana added to her food daily. And this is the medical miracle of what marijuana can do for you. And in the case of my godson, I'm already trying to find a way to see if we can help him in that way. But this week, Senator Perry Clark has been talking with and having people show up to discuss medical marijuana, including our guest from Florida, who has been on government medical marijuana for 30 years. And it's a timely topic. I wish we had a show to do on it. I actually wanted to get into it earlier tonight, but we went a different direction. Guys, pay attention to this going on with medical marijuana and everything in Kentucky. We have to get this approved. Me and Dale have been very adamant about that for a long time. But today, we now have proof that medical marijuana is indeed a miracle drug. And I ask you guys to open your minds a little bit and pay attention to that. That's it for tonight. Dale, anything on mind for tomorrow?
Yeah, we're going to have a fun show. I think in a little bit, we're going to have to touch on the taboo topic of the fact that blacks commit more murders on whites at 14 times the rate that whites do. So we'll have to touch on that topic and piss off some people and make them pee their panties and be upset with me. And then the other topic that we're going to talk about is what do you get when you take this radical 60s progressivism and you capture it with a spirit of militarism, and that's what you get called the new nationalist left that is rising up.
That's definitely a show I'm looking forward to. And don't forget, guys, you can check out Louisville Politics on Facebook. We're actually posting a lot of these national stories now, Dale, on our Facebook page at Louisville Politics on the black on white crime. It is pretty much epidemic. I mean, it really is. What the media is ignoring, and we don't put those stories out there. I want to make this very clear. I don't put those stories out there because of some racist slant where I'm trying to incite racism and make white people hate black people. No, I don't do that at all. What I want is some of the racists in the black community to realize that they have got to police their own community and clean it up. That's the only way we're going to get through racism. I can't fix the black community. They can only fix themselves. But when they are being force-fed lies and not being told the truth about what's going on in the communities, to me, that's a disservice to the black community itself. You know, you can only fix a problem if you're aware there is a problem. And that's the purpose of us at Louisville Politics on our Facebook page and other areas that we post at. That's the thing that we want to do and we hope to accomplish by posting these stories that mainstream is ignoring, to let the black communities know, hey, we know what's going on. Start cleaning up your area. Come to me and ask me for help. I will do anything I can on a personal level. But if we don't know that there's a problem, we don't identify the problem, then we certainly can't fix the problem. So that's a very timely topic. I'm glad to see Dale's going to cover that tomorrow night at 7 on the TNT Thursday Night Truth Show. Don't forget our good friend Ken Molman, Sunday night at 7 o'clock, and Liberty Unbridled. Trust me, you guys will love that show. Ken goes to a lot of places and just calls a spade, man. So check out our shows Sunday through Thursday night at 7 o'clock right here on the MVM Radio Network. Don't forget to check out LouisvillePolitics.com. You can listen to our replays here on iTunes, Stitcher Radio. And with that said, have a great night, folks. Thanks so much for listening. Take care.